LinkedIn presents.
From one caregiver to another, welcome. If you're tired, confused, frustrated, searching for answers, looking for resources, about at your wit's end, you tied a knot and it's coming undone, well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Fading Memories. I'm your host, Jennifer, and thank you for tuning in today. This podcast offers advice, wisdom, and hope from caregivers who have lived the experience and survived to tell the tale. Think of us as your caregiver best friend. You've heard me talk about the product line from Pharmacy for over a year, and I've got great news for you. For April 2023, you can get 30% off these already affordable products. So now is the time to stock up and help support the show. If you're caring for a loved one at home, you should definitely try the bathing cloths, the no rinse shampoo and body wash, and definitely the odor eliminator. Every home needs odor eliminator. I've personally used the hydrogen peroxide wipes for superficial burns. Pharmacy also has a hemorrhoid wipe or a foam option, whichever you prefer. They have alcohol pads for regular injections or other sanitizing needs. So what does my household use? Definitely the odor eliminator, witch hazel wipes for skincare, bathing cloths, and the alcohol wipes. Use the hot link in the episode notes or head to my website for the same link. It's also in the episode notes.
I think the potential that dance has always had to really be adaptive and important part of human culture and really understanding it in a new way. You know, I've been a performer, so it had really been really on stage behind that proscenium arch that I understood was one way that dance could be experienced. But this work really put dance for me back in the community. And I really love that because I experienced so much personal benefit and joy from being a dancer that just the opportunity to share that with more people, I think just, like I said, let's sort of relit the passion for me as to why I think probably as a little girl, I fell in love with this art form.
When professional ballerina Rachel Barr hung up her pointe shoes, she became a scientist who focuses on pioneering ways to improve the lives of those with dementia through dance. You can take the dancer from the dance, but you can't take the dance out of the dancer, says Barr. As part of her research, she started a groundbreaking MRI study that had examined dancers' brains while they learned new choreography. This research led to them starting a pilot program to determine if they could bring dance to people with dementia-causing diseases. From this program, the movie Dancer, Not Dementia was born. Dancer, Not Dementia is a short film by Canada's National Ballet School. It captures the extraordinary experiences of dancers living with dementia and their caregivers. I've got a scary story for you. What would you do if your mom was trying to withdraw over $1 million to send to someone who called her and offered her a stake in a new business? This is actually a true story that thankfully has a happy ending. The scammers didn't get a dime out of mom. The bigger question is, how do we prevent these phone calls? Thankfully, there's IMP. IMP is a product that stops 100% of unwanted calls. Plug the device into a phone jack, and IMP will only allow wanted callers to ring through. IMP pairs your smartphone contacts with your landline to create a list of callers who can make your phone ring. IMP then checks every call that comes in. If it's a caller IMP recognizes, they ring through. Otherwise, IMP silently handles the call for you in the background. No ring, no problem. IMP provides real-time tools to help you manage any landline. For caregivers near or far, this means safety for your loved one and peace of mind for you. The easy-to-use app gives you access from anywhere at any time. Get yours at joinimp.com or use the hot link in the show notes. And help support my podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us again today. I have something extra special for you. With me is Rachel Barr. She is the director and producer of a movie called Dancer, Not Dementia, which was released in January on YouTube, which will be linked in the show notes as usual. And I got to see a clip so far, and it was beautiful. So thank you for joining me, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about you, your background, why you picked this particular topic.
Sure. So my background is in dance. I grew up in dance. I trained professionally at Canada's National Ballet School. I danced professionally in companies around the world. And when I went back to school, I went to university later in life, and I thought I'd have nothing to do with dance. I wanted to study something new. Started down the route of psychology, you know, studying human behavior. And just one thing led to another, and I found myself researching dance, and initially started looking at how dance is learned in the brain. And because as a dancer, knowing that expertise of complex motor sequences actually at some point feels very habitual. So very curious to how that happened. So that was my initial focus, was really looking at dance in the brain. But doing that with professional dancers actually started to led me to ask questions around, well, how is dance experienced by people who are experiencing degeneration in the brain? And initially that was with people living with Parkinson's disease. It's a movement disorder, and some of the same areas of the brain were implicated that we were looking at in our expert dancers. And that actually kind of led me to start learning more about offering dance opportunities for older adults, which then led to, as well, people living with dementia tend to most often be older people. So that kind of kept going, and that actually became a whole research area of interest for me, which is dance in older adulthood.
So you just kept sliding down that path.
You know, they say you can take the dancer out of the dance, but you just can't take the dance out of the dancer. So I really couldn't have imagined that, you know, I thought I was going to do something new, but I just, I've only kind of been, I would say fallen in love with my art form again, through this research and through this route of accessing it and understanding it.
Which is fantastic. It's like you're learning all about dance through a whole different modality, which is really cool. So do you have anybody in your family that's got any neurodegenerative diseases?
I do. But to be fair, it wasn't what connected me to this work. I think it actually really was me seeing the potential of dance. I think the potential that dance has always had to really be a really adaptive and important part of human culture, and really understanding it in a new way. And, you know, I'd been a performer, so it had really been really on stage behind that proscenium arch that I understood was one way that dance could be experienced. But this work really put dance for me back in the community. And I really love that because I experienced so much personal benefit and joy from being a dancer that just the opportunity to share that with more people, I think just kind of, like I said, sort of relit the passion for me as to why I think probably as a little girl, I fell in love with this art form.
That makes sense. I know that, you know, there's lots of quote unquote advice on how to maintain your cognitive abilities. Basically what you're doing is you're growing more neurons, which is neuroplasticity. You know, I never thought I'd learn all this sciencey stuff doing a podcast, but here I am. And one of the recommendations is generally like learn some new dance steps. And so did you find anything similar in your research that learning dance, maybe as a, you know, an adult or older adult, actually benefits our cognition?
So thanks for the question. My research hasn't been on prevention specifically. When I've worked with people living with Parkinson's disease or dementia, they already have the diagnosis. And I haven't been looking at that specifically. But in theory, and actually there are some researchers that have published in this, in terms of activity, if you had to pick one activity to engage in, and you think about dance, it engages the body physically. It engages the body cognitively, right? It's complex motor sequence. It's not just walking on a treadmill. You have to remember patterns. You have to cue it to music. You know, you need to retain that information and build on it, you know, week to week if you weren't, you know, learning a dance. And it engages you emotionally and socially because, you know, music has meaning, interactions with other people through the eye contact, the work you're doing has meaning, and also what you're choosing to express has meaning. So if you're going to pick one activity and take as many boxes off as you can in terms of what we know about how to maximize your potential in older adulthood, you're probably going to get the most bang for your buck with dance. There has been some research that has compared it to other activities in terms of prevention. That hasn't been my work specifically, but you know, it could also be. I am a bit biased. I'm very passionate about dance, but certainly if somebody is curious, I'd encourage them to try it out because I have yet to see in our older adult classes somebody, you know, come. Maybe they've never ever danced before, but actually really enjoyed it.
I can see that. Now you've worked part of your research was with people with Parkinson's. I have a family friend who has Parkinson's. One of the activities he did to kind of help maintain his balance and kind of stabilize where he was at with the disease was boxing, mm-hmm. which is kind of, I mean, you've got movements and they're not choreographed per se like dance, but I can kind of see a little similarity, but I would think dance would be taking that even a step further, like, because you have to use a few more complex tools in the mind, you know, get, like you said, cue it with music, build on it. What did you discover with people with Parkinson's and how it helped them?
So, I'll say that the dance for people living with Parkinson's literature is very well established. Dozens of papers have been published, including review papers. It does, you know, really for people living with Parkinson's really strongly suggest that it is quite beneficial on many levels. And there, I'll say this, any activity that you find accessible and engaging, you should be doing, especially in older adulthood. So, you know, if it's not dance, then it's not dance. If it's boxing, it's, you know, just do it. If you want to, you know, tandem cycling, if that's what you're into, to go for it. But the support for dance is quite profound in that it's not just the physical benefits, it's not just the emotional benefits, not just the social benefits, but it's also the very low attrition rates where, you know, you get people starting to dance and they keep coming back, which you can't necessarily say with some of these other interventions that are, or like physio, you know, it's not as inspiring to sustain it. And I think that that's a key factor too. Like we all know we should be exercising, but we don't, you know, it's hard to sustain. Whereas dance is sort of coming from a different angle and certainly our approach to it actually as well, in particular, with all of our dance programming for older people it's actually not that approach of an intervention, or we're not trying to make it a therapy. We're actually trying to, our programs are meant to make the dance experience accessible for whatever community we're working with. So if we're working with people living with Parkinson's, we'll take certain considerations into account. If we're working with people living with dementia, of course, we'll take those considerations in how we offer the dance opportunity. But we're not talking about the disease in the program, addressing the disease specific symptoms. We are creating more accessible opportunities to dance because my position certainly is that all humans benefit from dancing. And if we can make the experience accessible across the lifespan, then we can benefit from it across the lifespan.
I believe that. And dance is a lot more fun than a lot. I would think dance is more fun than boxing. And I've done both. I've done boxing exercise classes, and they're okay, but I'm more on the dance side. So how did you go from your university research to the movie? And I'm sure I'm taking like a big leap, because I'm assuming that you've also worked with people in the community and that led to the movie, but I'll let you explain that.
So, yeah, you're right. It's not nothing's a straight line, but I'll try to paint as direct a line as possible in a few minutes. One of the research projects that we did, and we actually just published a book about, it's called Dance, Aging, and Collaborative Arts-Based Research, where we were looking at, it was a qualitative study, not quantitative. We were observing, we were talking to people to understand how dance supports people living with dementia and their carers. Really two key findings were really captured in a lot of different ways qualitatively in this study. It was a four-year study, and we were in non-urban centers offering dance in Ontario, the province that I'm in, and our neighboring province, Manitoba, here in Canada. And the two key findings were that dance supports the social inclusion of people living with dementia and their carers. So opportunities to actually be part of a community, have meaningful engagement with the community. And the other key finding, which, you know, wasn't even directly, I would say, kind of thought of maybe as we initiated the research project, but that really came out quite profoundly in the work, was the way in which dance challenges dementia-related stigma. And I'll give you some examples of this, where we would hear people that we were talking to about the opportunity to dance, you know, carers, formal, informal carers of people living with dementia say, oh, I didn't know he could move like that. I didn't know she had that in him, like with that twinge of surprise, right? Because so many of us carry, and myself included, and you know, constantly relearning this, is that just because you have a diagnosis of dementia doesn't mean you don't have the capacity to be creative and joyful and silly and all sorts of different things that I think is often overshadowed by, we know the challenges, we know how difficult it can be for the person living with dementia, for the people that care for them, and not to minimize that at all. But it just doesn't mean that you don't have a capacity for all this beauty and joy. And that's something that a lot of people kind of, it really came out in the work, that just that opportunity to dance with people living with dementia helped people see them, see a side of them that wasn't dementia. And that's led to a grant we received from the Public Health Agency of Canada to really disseminate this idea, and that dance is a great tool to challenge dementia-related stigma, which led to a campaign that we launched last year, which we intentionally called Dancer, Not Dementia, because we wanted to challenge that stigma. And everyone in our dance classes is referred to as a dancer, and that's our dance classes for people living with dementia, but also here at Canada's National Ballet School, also our professional ballet students, we call them dancers too. So, you know, acknowledging that they're people and not their disease. So we sort of, you know, focused on our area and really just wanted to say, you know, dancer, you're a dancer here. You're not your disease. You're not dementia. And that all led to this film, that we created to further disseminate these ideas, that, you know, we've been very fortunate to put together. It was a bit challenging, obviously, with some of the COVID restrictions, especially in long-term care where we wanted to film it, but, we managed to get it done. It's just been, great and so far really, really well received.
So did you start taking dance programs to long-term care communities, and then you started on the film, I'm assuming?
So in Canada, we developed a program. The program that was researched called Sharing Dance Older Adults. This idea of obviously sharing dance, we partnered with Baycrest Health Sciences. They're a Toronto-based geriatric research institute, hospital, and long-term care facility. And we co-developed a program for older people with different physical and cognitive abilities. So not diagnosis specific, but really just reaching older people with different, that might need different needs than a traditional dance class. And so we that started, you know, as far back as like 2013, we started offering, developing that program. And then, you know, Canada's big and we wanted to reach more people. So in 2016, so the research study I just talked about, it was actually the remote delivery, so the virtual delivery of this program in non-urban communities. And this was, you know, predates COVID and Zoom and all of that, where we recognized who are the, you know, communities that have the least access to dance. And so that's why we wanted to offer this virtual version where groups still came together to dance. There's still that social interaction, but we were streamed. We had streamed classes that we were on the screen. That's now available in Canada, across the country. We have an app, Sharing Dance Older Adults, and you can access it online too. Either we have an at-home version, but also the group version now is sort of picking up again, now that people are feeling more comfortable coming together.
And so what kind of, I'm sure you have lots of really interesting stories about working with residents in the long-term care community. Do you have any that kind of pop in your head when I bring it up?
Well, actually, we were just last week doing one of our training sessions for dance teachers, learning to teach dance to older people living with dementia. And I was offering a dance to the group. We were going to go to a sea. It didn't matter which sea, you know, whatever, you know, it could have been the Caribbean, it could have been the Mediterranean, wherever people wanted to go. And we had our wonderful musician with us on the piano. We started swimming. And then I said to the group, maybe we want to just float on our backs. And I said, let's float on our backs. And I said, feel the sun as it's warming your body and the brightness. And one of the dancers in the class, you know, her eyes were closed and she just said, oh, that feels good. Right. And I wanted to give this example, like it of course made me smile in the moment, but I think if people are trying to understand dance, right, there's lots of ways to understand it. You know, my background is in classical ballet and in classical ballet, a lot of it is storytelling. And so we infuse a lot of that into our work because it really kind of opens people up to being creative, and it helps people be present in an experience, you know, whether it's real or not, but that they go with you. And I think that imagination and playfulness that we typically, you know, kind of only like allow like young children to kind of access or play with. I think that opportunity at all stages of life, it can be really joyful and fun. And so it was really a nice experience to kind of feel that, you know, she was with me, you know, whatever you see, you know, feeling the warm sun. I felt it too. It did feel good. And I think that's just sort of an example of things that you know, you might not be sure somebody is with you in the dance classes. You know, when we go into long-term care, it looks different. Not everybody's going to move, you know, full out with feeling. They might just be tapping their foot. They might just be clapping their hands or even nodding their head. Or sometimes, you know, you invite them in to dance and say, no, I'm just going to watch you. But all of that is engagement. There's no right or wrong. And what is profound is the way that is able to help, help people feel good and experience, you know, joy and other positive experiences like feeling the warm sun.
That's really cool. And I could feel the warm sun, although it might be the heater that's underneath the desk.
Well, for me in Canada, I was really trying to picture someplace warm and hot. It was pretty cold.
Yes, I live across the street from a lake, and I like paddleboarding, and that's where my brain went. The Pacific Ocean is cold compared to the Atlantic Ocean, which is weird, unless you get to Hawaii. But on our coast, it's cold. So I like the lake, and it's a man-made lake, so it's not very deep. So it's not cold. It's lovely. It's perfect. It's a perfect lake almost. But you were talking about people that don't necessarily participate beyond maybe toe tapping or clapping. This is a revelation. Nobody has heard in almost 300 episodes. So way back in the late 80s and 90s, my husband and I DJed weddings. And there was times when some of the crowds were tough, man. We referred to them as the toe tappers, the people you could tell they were enjoying the music, but you just couldn't get them out of chairs. So that made me smile when you said that, you know, that's still engagement. It just brought that memory back to my mind. But go ahead. Did you have another story?
No, that's great. And I think, you know, it's interesting because we respond to what's big and what we can see with our eyes, I think, understandably. And working with people living with dementia, and it has helped me appreciate, you know, there's so much more to the subtlety in all movement, you know, that we tend not to see or notice. But I think probably, you know, often toe tappers are having a great time, and they'll tell you as they're leaving the class, oh, that was great. So that's I could see how you would feel that way at a wedding, but maybe they were the toe tappers at the wedding too. So this is as engaged as they get.
As long as they were enjoying the music, we were fine. But it was, you know, that's the job, is to get people up and dancing and participating. And, you know, sometimes you'd have groups that were just, you know, they were just more reserved people. And, you know, you'd get the bride and groom, maybe some of the bridal party, a bunch of kids, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, this group is tough, man. Just a bunch of toe tappers. Oh, my gosh, that is such a flashback, because I think my husband stopped DJing in 1988 to like 2002, I think. I think it was 2002. So that was, you know, 21 years ago. Oh, my goodness. So what the clip that I saw to promote the movie, there was a lot of people participating. They were seated. But what I found very interesting was there was a lot of men. And in one brief part of the clip, these two men kind of clasp hands. And, you know, you can tell they're connected to each other and they're enjoying themselves. And it was not something you expect to see, two men, you know, participating in dance kind of together. It was interesting. So explain how you do some of these programs with the residents of the long-term care community. Because it's a little different than maybe with a bunch of six-year-olds or something.
Now we're going to take a quick break for an ad. These ads help me continue to bring the show to you for free. When I learned that despite eating as healthy as possible, we can still have undernourished brains, I was frustrated. I also live in a farming community, so I'm aware that our food isn't grown as well as we need. Learning about NeuroReserves, Relevate, and how it's formulated to fix this problem convinced me to give them a try. Now I know many of you are skeptical, as was I. However, I know it's working because of one simple change. My sweet tooth is gone. I didn't expect that, and it's not something other users have commented on, but here's some truth. My brain always wanted something sweet. Now, fruit usually did the trick, but not always. One bad night's sleep would fire up my sugar cravings so much they were almost impossible to ignore. You ever have your brain screaming for a donut? Well, for me, those days are gone. It's been about 6 months since I started taking the supplement, and I have no regrets. I believe in my results so much that I'm passing on my 15% discount to you. Try it for 2 or 3 months and see if you have a miraculous sweet tooth cure, or maybe just better focus and clarity. It's definitely worth a try. Now back to our conversation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, in long-term care, often they are regimented with programming. There's like traditional program, like you might see like bingo, other types of group programming. But the dance classes, we have experienced that, talking about people who maybe don't identify with dance, or often men who will say, oh, I don't dance, or I can't dance. But as soon as you get the music going, and it's music, and we're very intentional about the music. Music means so much to all of us. If it's songs that, are nostalgic, or songs that kind of just make you feel good because they have a great beat and are uplifting, it's hard to not participate. So we have maybe when asked about it, we've sort of faced a little bit of that, like, oh, I'm not a dancer, I got 2 left feet, or I don't dance. But if they're in the space and then they can hear the music, it's never really been actually the barrier that you would expect it might be, because it feels good. And it's obviously very intentional not to make it a gendered experience. Some people think of us, we're ballet school, so like, what is this going to be? How is my 92-year-old mother going to put on point shoes? And we're just like, we're not doing that, right? We're taking, I think some of the great components of good dance pedagogy and adapting it for this community. So, you talk about the connection between people. When I'm teaching a ballet class to young dancers, I'm talking about eye line. Where are you looking? What are you looking at? Like, that's what you need, that the audience can follow the story you're telling on the stage. So using that in our dance, prompting the dancers to find somebody in the room to greet with that movement, or to offer this movement to. And that those are the moments that it really, you see people connecting. It's quite profound, because they may not always, especially in long-term care, be getting that much eye contact. Support is often provided. You'll see people providing care from behind, right? As they're wheeling them in or helping them, get moved to and fro, or standing, right? Talking to you, I'm standing, you're sitting in a wheelchair and I'm talking to you. Again, I'm not making eye contact with you. So, intentionally pulling from what we know about teaching dance, but then kind of putting it within this context and realizing actually, we have something to offer.
And generally, when you're in the long-term care community, are you leading the class with most of the participants seated? Because I didn't see anybody standing in the clip.
So sharing dance older adults, the version of the program that we have 2 versions of the program, in your seat and on your feet. Both have a seated option, even in the on your feet. But when we're working with people with cognitive challenges, we do the in your seat program. Not because people living with dementia can't walk, obviously lots of them can, but they may not be able to make safe decisions because they may not know if they can walk or stand up safely. So because the focus of the program is actually on being creative, inspiring movement, it's safer, but also really actually in some ways creates opportunity for more possibility of movement, right? Because then they don't have to be navigating balance. So that's the focus. We do often get impromptu stand up. And that's why it's important to have, staff support in the room. Somebody will want to stand up and dance because that's what they know, right? And they get excited. So that it does happen sort of like impromptu, but the program is offered from a seated position. We encourage the dancers often to stay seated because we want to be able for everyone to participate safely.
And you don't want people getting so excited they topple over, which would be most unfortunate.
You know, if we had the, you know, if we ran the program with enough support that those who wanted to stand, you know, could all have somebody supporting them, I could see, you know, in that way it working sometimes. But again, it's not really the focus of our approach isn't really on getting them standing. It's on getting them engaged with dance.
Which just makes sense. Do you generally, so the older adult dance program, I know I just butchered how you normally refer to it. Is it classical music or do you use different genres of music to aid the engagement?
All types of music. When we get to teach in person, we try to get to know the community. What kind of music do they like? What is meaningful to them? You know, and when we're teaching in Toronto, it's a very you know, diverse city. So it's really relevant to know, you know, who is this community and is there meaningful music for them? So it's not classical. We throw in some classical, and sometimes our dancers really love the classical ballet references, right? Depending on getting to know the group, they want to hear some Swan Lake and Move Like a Swan, but others not, and we wouldn't play that. So that's it's really about as much as we can, you know, sort of meeting that community where they're at, getting to know them, and then kind of supporting dance opportunities that would be meaningful to them.
Can you visualize like 20 years from now, like the kind of music that'll connect with older adults? Oh Lord. So I'm 56. So like I'll be almost 80 in 20 years. And it'll be a whole different type of music than you're probably using now, which sometimes is kind of like an internet, you know, social media kind of conversation about, you know, when I, because of our DJing days, it was a long time. I used to think of people that hit their 50th wedding anniversary as being married just after World War II. And let's see, 50 years from now was like 1973. So it's a definite different era of music. And I had, you know, it took me a while to make that shift. Like, you know, time is moving on. Not everybody that celebrated a 50th anniversary got married, you know, post-World War II, early 50s. It was kind of crazy. But, you know, you're going to have like dance older adult disco versions soon.
We already have that. I would say in the time that I've been doing this work, like in the last decade, you know, we may have started more with, you know, Frank Sinatra, but we are definitely getting requests for like Beatles music. So yeah, you definitely see and ABBA and, you know, that, yeah, I've had the thought of, you know, what music am I going to want to be dancing to, when I'm hopefully dancing at that age. So, yeah, it's part of it. I think it's something that makes it fun is, you know, kind of what's meaningful to this group and, you know, feeling different music and how it inspires you to move.
Hopefully you won't get a group of people like me, because I like all kinds of music and it just depends on my mood. So you'd have to figure out what mood I'm in and then what music fits that mood or what music I need to maybe alter a mood. It was one day I was just like, oh, it was during the pandemic and I was sick of being at home and, you know, kind of feeling down and negative and like the big black cloud was hanging over my head. And I thought, okay, well, I only really know one way to change this. I'd tried a couple other things, done a workout, et cetera. So I put on some Huey Lewis in the News. There's an Apple, curated Apple program, music program, where Huey Lewis actually talks about the like the background of what was going on when they recorded this song or what, you know, inspired the song. And so it's like him being a radio DJ, which, you know, speaks to my 80s roots and the 80s music. So it was really cool. And man, it only took like one song and poof, the black cloud went away. But there's other days I like, you know, rock or alternative or pop. It just depends on my mood.
I don't think you're alone. I think I'm like that too. And I think that's a little bit of the fun of creating these dance classes, right? Is when we don't have to stick to one style the whole class either. So we're always mixing it around, and we might have something really high energy, and then we might take it down, you know, to help everybody catch their breath and calm. And, you know, some people will enjoy some more than others. So yeah, I think that's part of the fun of creating this type of work.
So how did you go from all this research to creating a whole movie? Because that's kind of a big leap and a huge undertaking that you must have started before or during the pandemic.
So we knew, and there has been, you know, some research too about how film can be a really effective way to share messaging about people living with dementia. And I think because we really wanted the film to challenge dementia-related stigma, you know, we knew we wanted to have people living with dementia have an opportunity to speak and to show themselves dancing. So that really kind of, I think, drove the film. We worked with an incredible filmmaker, Anthony Granny. So he's the one that made the film, and our producers here at the Ballet School, Sapna Goyal, and Dr. Pia Kontos, who's a leading researcher in aging and dementia. So we had a great team to kind of, you know, ask questions, infuse ideas, and but really kind of, you know, it's not like we had to really kind of stage or dig. This is the stuff that happened, right? And you'll see in the film, like we went to the long-term care facilities where they lived and spoke to them about dance, danced with them, you know, talked about it. And really it's, I hope they feel also it's their story that they get to tell, you know, that they get to show, you know, what dance means for them. And that sort of speaks for itself with the message we wanted to send.
Yeah, there's a message going on social media right now. A doctor referred to people living with some sort of cognitive disability as a generation of zombies, which has gotten a lot of clapback on the internet. And so it's important to show their abilities and what's inside. I have a past guest. I think she's been on the show 3 times. The last time was with her husband, who was diagnosed mild cognitive impairment at 55. And he's always been an engineer, but he worked for Disney. So he was an Imagineer, and he was responsible for maintaining the rides at Disneyland. So he wasn't creative like we're talking about with dance or art. And since having to retire from that job, he has gotten into woodworking and painting. And he basically said that he's like this side of my brain, like the engineer side of my brain, doesn't really work so well anymore. So he's developing the creative artistic side, which is, you know, a little basic on, you know, brain hemispheres, but, you know, it does resonate to what we're talking about. And I find it fascinating that I've talk to people whose loved ones have, like, they've gone from stuffy engineer accounting, you know, inside the box kind of person to being somebody that's really creative. And it's just really fascinating. I find the brain absolutely fascinating. If I had, it was half my age and had twice the science ability, I would go into brain research because it's just absolutely fascinating, you know, and we need more of it, obviously. I'm not familiar with any dance and dementia related studies other than what we're talking about today. Are there others out there similar to what you're doing? I'm assuming so.
So there is a small but available you know, academic literature on dance and dementia. One challenge that I have with a lot of it is the focus on the therapeutic elements of dance. So, you know, it's a focus on how, you know, dance can, you know, minimize, like help to address, you know, behavioral outbursts or mood, and not to minimize that. That's great. And, you know, also not to minimize the enormous physical benefits that we all feel when we dance. I think, though, that it's a model of how we see dance and, quite frankly, how we see the arts that is quite narrow. And I think it's a bit deceptive because, you know, that then we go, oh, well, we need the arts, we need dance because it's good for your health. And it's actually the reverse. You know, dance is so adaptive. You know, humans have been dancing for the last 40,000 years. We need to keep dancing. You know, we know that all intuitively. So, you know, for the research to catch up and explain why and how, it's great. And it's kind of a lifelong passion of mine, but it's not because we don't know. We can see clearly it is a significant contribution to the human experience. So I get a little bit, I think it's a little bit challenging, the literature that does exist, but it does. And I think on one level, more research is very helpful because it does help the health sector to come on board and slowly make it a priority in understanding that this supports good health. But like I said, it limits it in a way. And so one of the arguments that myself and my colleagues make in our book is, there's been researchers for children with significant and serious disability say, you know, just because they have a disability doesn't mean that they can't flourish, right? You don't have to be healthy to flourish. If you know, flourishment, this idea, you know, as from the time of Aristotle, that, you know, people have meaning in their life, sense of accomplishment, meaningful relationships, positive emotions. You don't need to be healthy to still be able to flourish. And so, you know, rather than looking at dance as just a health intervention for people living with dementia, we see it as an aid in supporting human flourishment, because it does support meaning, it does support positive relationships, positive emotions, and you know, that's as much a goal in I think anyone's life as it is just to stay healthy, because, you know, eventually we, you know, our bodies will all decline. That it is inevitable, and you know, we can control little bits of this and that we understand, but supporting flourishment, you know, a lifelong flourishment, I think, is something else that we should be bringing our attention to for meaningful life.
I fully agree. So what you're saying basically in a nutshell is the people that have been researching dance as it's a therapy for people living with dementia, and your angle is more how they can flourish, which I absolutely love, because my mom was in memory care and she had friends, which she would not have had if she had lived with me. And I still laugh to this day because my mom's name was Diane and she befriended other Diane and they befriended other Diane, which was really confusing for those of us who didn't have a cognitive problem. And you couldn't ask my mom, where's Diane? Because that confused her. It was just crazy. But those ladies got into mischief. Not anything serious or harmful. Just I walked in mom's room one day and her area rug was gone. I was like, what in the living? You know, it was a 5x7 foot rug or 4x6 foot rug. Just the two of them rolled it up and hid it in the other gal's room. It's just like, why? But you know, I don't need to know why to just know that the two of them, I can just picture the two of them doing that and flourishing. I mean, my mom always tried to help the other residents because she had early onset Alzheimer's. Most of the residents were much older than her, and most of them either had walkers or wheelchairs. And she would always like lean out her door to her room and go, well, just let me know if there's anything I can help you with. Which always cracked me up because I was like, oh my God, you can barely help yourself. But that just gave her meaning and, you know, made her like feel like she was contributing or at least attempting to contribute. And, you know, and then there was the mischief. So that's an important aspect of all of our lives. And I think it's, you know, it's important that, excuse me, we keep researching that for people who are basically different, mentally than we are, you know, with Alzheimer's or autism or, you know, whatever. You know, we all aren't the same, and we just need to figure out how to connect different levels so we can all flourish well.
Absolutely.
So what's next on the agenda for you? It sounds like you've done a lot. Are you taking a break?
We're still trying to get this film seen by as many people as possible and foster conversations around this. Lots of people that I talked to about it had never thought about it this way. And even, you know, my own generation, you know, talking to friends, working in different sectors in healthcare or business, or it just hadn't really stopped to think about it. So I think really a focus now that we have the film, it's a great tool to share our message. So really trying to get it seen and talked about. And then I think, lifelong goal is to keep finding ways to help people access dance, experience dance, because, as I referenced before, I know it's a really adaptive human experience. And in a lot of our society and culture, it's kind of saved for, the elite, performer, or, I'm not a good dancer, therefore I can't do it. But this is something that, we all benefit from. Nobody owns it. It doesn't belong to anyone. It's a very human experience. So just trying to find ways to support that in all the communities that I'm able to connect with.
That's a very wonderful life goal. And I think my community has salsa dancing classes. You've inspired me to go check. They have line dancing, but that is not my thing. I'm not into country music. There's only a little bit of music I don't like.
That's it's all about the music. All about the music. Yeah.
And I don't know. I resonate more with salsa dancing. So hopefully I can go find out that they're still doing it. This community has lots of groups and organizations that do different things, but of course COVID screwed a lot of that up, so it's still kind of coming back to life slowly and surely. So I'm gonna go check that out, because I've thought about doing dance classes for probably a decade, and so now you've inspired me to just stop thinking about it, maybe take the next step.
That's great. That's wonderful to hear. You've made my day with that,
Jennifer. Oh good. So the movie is viewable on YouTube, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Dancer, not dementia. Please do, if you, anybody listening wants to share their feedback, you can put it post it in the comments or send it to us directly. Love to hear and connect with people that have seen the film.
Well, as always, I will make sure that is linked in the show notes, so you can just click on it. Not that you can't remember that title easily, but I'll just make it really easy for people to get to. I very much appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate that you reached out and wanted to tell me all about it. I'm always amazed. I've been doing this podcast for 5 years. My mom had Alzheimer's for 20. Mom's been gone for 3, so I'm a little surprised that I'm still learning things, which is good for my brain, but I'm always excited to learn something new and different in this journey of helping people, family caregivers like myself. So I appreciate the research, and Hopefully you will help people understand that flourishing is a goal we should always strive for.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
You've gotten all the way to the end, which tells me you would probably be interested in my weekly email newsletter. It's short, to the point, and it's got some great behind-the-scenes information I think you'd really enjoy. There's a sign-up link in the show notes. Now, here is what is coming up next Tuesday.
Any piece of clothing that's altered to make dressing faster, safer, or easier. For us specifically, we're focusing on older adults who are living with changes related to cognition, to motor or mobility or range of motion, frankly. Because there are a lot of brands that are making great adaptive apparel, but they tend to focus on younger adults. They tend to focus on people between the ages of 15 and 50. And You know, as we age, our bodies change, our needs change, our skin changes. So when we think about our designs, we are designing with an older adult's body and needs and changing abilities in mind.
Thank you for listening today. And once again, we'll be back in your ears next Tuesday. Please check out our sponsors and help support our show.